Rav Yisrael Ariel. He's a great person in his own right, but a lot of people know his brother, Rav Yaakov Ariel. I mean, I suffer from that also, you know, like, see how many people here in Shalim say, are you Rabbi Yaakov's brother? I said, no, he is. It's a question of perspective, you know. So Rav Yisrael Ariel, who runs the Mechon HaMikdash, and he's into Beit HaMikdash activities and so on. So there was an issue in the 19th century already of some Rabbanim blowing shofar on Shabbat in the Old City. In the Old City. So Rav Zevin writes about this in his Mo'adim B'Halacha. Today, it's just a handful of people who are just hanging in there with this minhag, but rank and file of Am Yisrael do not blow shofar this coming Shabbat. The question is why? So let's look at the middle of the page where it says, Perush HaMishnah LaRambam, the Rambam's commentary, as they say, for the reason that we've gathered here today to study Rambam's Mishnah commentary. Kvar be'arnu lecha kama pa'amim. I have explained several times over, says the Rambam, and he means in other locations of the Mishnah commentary. The subject of Yerushalayim as opposed to outside Yerushalayim shows up in various halachot. For example, the eating of korbanot that are korban shlamim, that the owner of the korban gets parts of it. Korban Pesach, for that matter, right? So you have to eat the meat of these animals in Yerushalayim. The question is, you have to be in the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash? No. It's the Yerushalayim, and it has boundaries, and the boundaries are sanctified. The area within the boundaries are sanctified as Kedushat Yerushalayim. What about today? The municipal boundaries of Yerushalayim. So we have an idea, I mean, Fagi sitting here did guides in the Old City, that there are lines that can be drawn where maybe we're not exact 100%, but we have a fairly good idea of certain boundaries in the Old City where Yerushalayim was Mekudeshet. As far as I know, the Kotel area is in. Now, why is that important? Because the Rambam believes, and he's going to say it here, the Rambam believes that the Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim are inseparable, which means Yerushalayim is a outer orbit of what Beit HaMikdash is all about. And basically, he takes us back to the days of the Mishkan in the desert. So in the desert, we had, you have the Mishkan in the centerpiece, and then around the Mishkan, you had four sides, of which each side was occupied by the families of Levi, which was Gershon, Kahat, and Merari, and the fourth side were the Kohanim, Bnei Aaron. So that was the inner orbit around the Mishkan. And then there was an outer orbit of four sides, of each side having three Shvatim, 3 times 4, 12. That's Am Yisrael. Yafeh, and that's how they marched in the Midbar. So the area of the Mishkan and the courtyard was called Machane Shechina. The area of the Shevet Levi was called Machane Leviya, why not? The area of the Leviim. And outside that was called Machane Yisrael. And if you were beyond that, you are Michutz La Machane. And that's for people who are Tzara'at, leprosy, and so on. Anybody had to be Michutz La Machane went beyond. Yafeh. Says the Rambam that model is now transposed upon Yerushalayim, even though nobody's living there any longer. Just erase the fact that this is the location, the address of Am Yisrael. But the halacha of the three zones maintains themselves. With regard to Beit HaMikdash, the courtyard, the chatzer, and the Beit HaMikdash proper of Machane Shechina, Har HaBayit is Machane Leviya. Again, no Leviyim are living there, but we call it the zone of Machane Leviya. And Yerushalayim is Machane Yisrael. Machane Yisrael. And now we start kicking in all kinds of halachot. For example, a person who is tamei met, person went to the cemetery and was in physical contact with a corpse or carried, was nosei aron, or under the roof of somebody who died. So a person becomes tamei met, and most of us, for practical purposes, are tamei met throughout one's lifetime. one comes in contact on that level, and you need a para aduma to get out of it, and we don't have that. And hence, once a person is tamei mate, person's tamei mate for the rest of your life, until otherwise indicated. Beseda. Which means, you're not allowed to walk into Machane Shechina. Which means that if you can draw on the map on Harabayit, where Beit HaMikdash stood, and where the Azara was, you're not allowed to walk in there. If you walk into there, it's a Chiyuv Karet. It's a very serious infraction. Very, very serious. And this is the reason that the Rabbanut Rashid didn't want to get involved in giving their blessings to going on Har HaBayit, because the feeling was that so many people are going to trespass. They're not going to look at the signs. Whether, not only non-religious people, but even sometimes religious people, it could be by accident, by shogeg, they're going to enter into the area that they're not allowed to be in. So that's one point of view. Rav Goren Zatzal took a different stand, and he said that if we don't continue to occupy the Har HaBayit, we're losing it. So in other words, everything that happened in the Six-Day War is going to be undone. So that's a different point of view. It's halachic / political. There's a political side to what Rav Goren said, no doubt about that. But that was his opinion. Others say, look, the Rabbanut im kol hakavod, but if you're careful, all you have to do is know where is Machan Levia, where is Har HaBayit, and where is the line of the Azara. So one thing we know, if this page is Har HaBayit, the outer perimeter of Har HaBayit today is not the Azara, but it's Har HaBayit. And a Har HaBayit, a person who's Tamei Mate is allowed to enter. But you're not allowed to enter if you're Tamei on different levels. But Tamei on different levels, take a dunk in the mikveh, and you've dealt with it. So all you have to do is do a proper tvilah in the mikveh. We must probably remove shoes because of that halacha of shalna alecha me'al raglecha. Empty pockets. I mean, you can't just walk on Har HaBayit. Empty out your pockets. And most probably the most difficult thing beyond that, the pathway is simply to walk around the outer perimeter. On Har HaBayit, the outer perimeter. You're not going to trespass anything. And you just have to be careful when you get to the west side, which is the other side of the wall is going to be the Kotel. That is the Kotel. But here is Kodesh Kodashim. It's very narrow. The path is narrow. Whereas when you get on Har HaBayit, on this part, and then you walk around, there's plenty of room. There's a lot of leverage to walk around. When you get to that last part by the Tzad HaMaravi, you have to just be very close to the wall if you don't want to go on to what might be considered Makom Mikdash, Mamash Makom Mikdash. Fine, so that we understand. But you know what the hardest part isn't? Not even that part, not even that last part. In that, going to the mikveh, not the hardest part. Taking off the shoes, not the hardest part. Hardest part is that the only permissibility to walk on Har HaBayit is Avodat Hashem, service of God. Let's define that halachically. Korban, okay, we don't have that. One second, we'll get to tefillah in a second. Hishtachavia, bowing on Har HaBayit is an act of Avodat Hashem. I got news for you, the Waqf won't let you do that. If they see you go down on your knees, they're going to pick you up and throw you right off the mountain. Can't do that. So what is allowed? Well, tefillah. If they see your lips mumble, they're also going to. So now, of late, they turn aside. There were a few years where you weren't allowed to daven. So let's assume you can't daven. If you can't daven, there's no justification to walk on Har HaBayit. But, haha. There's a Mishnah in Masechet Brachot, in the third parak, that says that certain people who are Tamei, there was an attempt made by Ezra Sofer that in order to say Kriyat Shema, to say a Bracha, anything of a Devash B'Kedusha, you have to be Tahor. You have to go to the mikveh. And then Chazal teach us, Am Yisrael couldn't do it. Gzeira Shatzibur Lo Yechola Lamod Bo. It just became not practical. So they dropped it. So now, even if you're Tamei, you can bend, you can say Perukat Amazon, you can say Brachot, Kiddush, Kriyat Shema, the works. But the Mishnah deals with the scenario when this Takana was in force. So how's that person who didn't go to the mikveh, how's he going to say Kriyat Shema? How's he going to say a bracha? How's he going to daven? So the Mishnah says, Yaharher b'libo, meditate. And this becomes an interesting halacha. Because what did the Lubavitcher Rebbe do the last 2 years of his life after his stroke and he wasn't able to talk? Or for that matter, anybody that loses the power of speech but is fully, you know, cognizant of what's going on around him and wants to say a bracha. How do you daven? The answer is you meditate the tefillah, hirhur halev, which means that although the halacha says we should be saying the bracha and saying the shema and saying the tefillah, but the fallback position is meditation. And therefore, when a person would go on Harabayit today, he should be involved in active meditation of tefillah from beginning to the end. That's hard. That's hard. You're not going up as a tourist. Take a nice picture, a nice selfie with the Dome of the Rock behind me. That's not what it's all about. It has to be an expression of Avodat Hashem, and you have to maintain that for the entire duration, which is about an hour and a half walk, by the way, because you go with a group, and it takes about an hour and a half. So that's not easy. That is not easy. And the truth of the matter is, I was caught in a bind, because on the one hand, I very much identified with the idea of going up to Har HaBayit. On the other hand, I had the Soloveitchiks and Rav Lichtenstein cautioning, seriously cautioning, against it. So when you don't know what to do, it says, Shev va'al ta'aseh adif, sit tight and don't do anything. Until my son's wedding. And my son, who studied in the yeshiva in the north, in Kiryat Shmona, his Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Tzvanya Drori, took them up to Har HaBayit several times over, prepared them for it. And the custom became that a chatan, on the day of his wedding, goes up to Har HaBayit. And my son asked me to accompany him on Har HaBayit, and he knew that I was in a bind here. And he did something nasty. He said, would you disappoint your son on his wedding day? That was really nasty. So I said, there are times you take off your rabbi hat, you put on your Abba hat, and you do it. No regrets. No regrets whatsoever. It was one of my most spiritually thrilling moments in my life, to the extent that when I got off Har HaBayit, I looked at the Kotel and I apologized to the Kotel and I said, Katan alai. You've now become miniature. You've become smaller. Because I remember going to the Kotel for the first time in my life in 72. Wow. The Kotel, right? It's like people after 67 went to the Kotel. Wow. And now, after an experience at Har HaBayit, all right, the Kotel, the Katan alai. And then when my daughter got married, so, you know, she could do nothing less. So said it was already a second visit to Har HaBayit. But the first one was absolutely exhilarating, exhilarating. So I'll add another point. 25th wedding anniversary several years ago, that's almost 23 years ago. So our kids did something, which was very nice, an all day production. It included different stations of what me and my wife had to do. One of them was a flight over Yerushalayim. When there was still Atarot Airport, they ordered a flight. The two of us would get a flight around Yerushalayim. For my wife, she sat in the back seat and buried her head. She wasn't interested. She said, just tell me when we're landing, and, you know, wake me up when we're landing. For me, it was Gan Eden, you know. So the pilot said, well, look, you know, you're the customer. Where do you want to fly? So I said, you know what, around Har HaBayit. But do me a favor, don't go into the airspace, because there's an issue that the Kedusha is Boka'at Ad HaShamayim. So even if you're 3,000 feet in the air, you know, if you're Tameh, you shouldn't do that. So he looks at me and he says, you know, Rav Avadya says it's okay. I said, I know, because Rav Goren said it's not okay. So Rav Avadya said it was okay. He tells me he had Rav Avadya on a plane and he said it was okay to do it. Okay. Beseda, I'm not arguing. There's a view, it's called the Ravid. Rabbi Avram ben David basically said that it would be okay. But the Rambam's view is that it's more the Chumrah. So he said, you're a customer. You don't want? I'm not going to go into Har HaBayit, and so on. So we dealt with these issues of Kedusha. There was a, when Dr. Zerach Varhaftig, Zichron Levracha, who was not only a great statesman, but also a tremendous Talmid Chacham, and also, to his credit, was able to bring 6,000 Jews out of Lita through Shanghai. That whole business of Shanghai was b'schut Zerach Varhaftig, Zichron Levracha. He was Sara Datot at one point, religious minister of religious affairs, and he asked Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach a shayla. So today there's Har Menuchot, and it's part of Yerushalayim. It's like just the next block of Givat Shaul, but you know it's part of Yerushalayim. But well, you know, once upon a time it wasn't, because once upon a time the city ended with the Rachov Yafo, Shchunat Eitz Chaim, and Givat Shaul was like a new city, like Ramat Rachel in the south, or Gilo, or Ramot. Is it part of Yerushalayim or not part of Yerushalayim? So Rav Shlomo Zalman was asked by Dr. Vahaftig, they're now making this new cemetery in Givat Shaul. If somebody requests Kvura b'Yerushalayim, to be buried in Yerushalayim, does Har Menuchot answer the call? Because there was burial in Sanhedria. That was the cemetery. So is now Har Menuchot, which is beyond Givat Shaul, is that called Kvura b'Yerushalayim? It's interesting, Rav Shlomo Zalman's answer. He says, I don't know why anybody would even request Kvura b'Yerushalayim. The minhag was to bury outside Yerushalayim. Why is Har HaZeitim where it is? Because it was outside Yerushalayim, outside the wall. And the story of Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, who's mentioned here in the Mishnah, of how they succeeded in getting him out of the siege of Yerushalayim by feigning a levaya that he was dead, and the Roman soldiers wanted to open up the casket and see if he was really dead, and they told him it's an infectious disease, you know, we're all going to get sick and so on, better keep it closed, and they bought it, and that's where he meets up with Vespasian, and he says that he's the emperor. And ultimately, ten li yavna v'chachameha, and Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai saves Torah. So this story indicates that burials were not done in Yerushalayim, says Rabbi Shlomo Zalman. But then he said, okay, somebody wants it, so let's get to the core of, is it Yerushalayim or not? So Rabbi Shlomo Zalman said, there are two things here. There's Kedushat Yerushalayim and Shame Yerushalayim. A place that's known to the public of Yerushalayim. You make a wedding in Bayit Vagan. What do you write in the Ketubah? Yerushalayim. Because of Yerushalayim. That's what it's called. So if you're going to call Givat Shaul Yerushalayim, so then somebody requesting Kvura Yerushalayim, it's called Yerushalayim. It's not Beit Shemesh. It's Yerushalayim. Fine. That's all. But it's not Kedushat Makom. And we know that. We know it. Where we're sitting right here is not Kedushat Makom. Kedushat Makom is we have the boundaries, and it's not the entire old city, but it's basically the old city with a little bit here and a little bit there. I'll just say one point, that the Sanhedrin has the authority to expand the Kedushat Yerushalayim, and my humble opinion, they're going to do it. They're going to do it. We daven tekabe shofar gadol l'chayotenu, and then hashiva shofteinu k'vav shana, the reconstituting of the Sanhedrin, and then we Yerushalayim mircha. So Yeshayahu said, harchivi mekom o'aleich, expand the borders. Well, it's going to happen, and all of it will be kadosh. You know why that's important? Because when I live in Katamon, and I have a korban pesach, because Feige's husband's going to do it for me, and he promised to make me a korban pesach, I'm not going to have to, you know, sit in the old city. I'm going to have to take it back to my house and make my seder and be eat it b'kedushat Yerushalayim. That's going to be very important. Yeah. So the issue of Purim is not an issue of kedushat Yerushalayim. Right, it's a Yerushalayim issue, but not an issue of Kedushat Yerushalayim. So that's a shir in itself, and there was dissenting opinions for many years in different communities. Slowly but surely, most of the new communities have come on the bandwagon of Tedvav, the 15th. Even Rav Avad Yosef at one point suggested the 14th, changed his mind at the end of his life because of continuity of building of Har HaChotzvim and with Ramot and so on. So it becomes an integral part of Yerushalayim. So there are some some who are just hanging in there that with their view of Yudalit. But it's interesting that the late chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, Rav Tzipa Frank, who was Adam Gadol in everybody's opinion, explained the very interesting halacha of Purim, reading it not only on Tedvav in a walled city, but even if you're close to the walled city, Samuch v'nir'eh, right? Why do you have to have that? Either you're here, you wonder. If you're there, it's something else. He said, because of lo titgo dedu, lo tasu agudot agudot. You should not have in one locale some making Purim on Tedvav and some on Yodalit. And unfortunately, that's what happened for a while in Har Nof. It happened for that in Ramot. But it's ironing itself out. Yeah, Rivka. Yeah. Yafeh. Okay, so let's understand what this is all about. Number one, from the point of view of the Talmud Yerushalmi, it's biblical that there's no shofar on Shabbat. Biblical. Why? Because the Yerushalmi takes makes a drasha that there are two psukim, one in Parshat Pinchas, Yom Truah Yelachem, day of hearing the sounds of the Truah, and in Parshat Emor, Zichron Truah Mikra Kodesh. As if to say, we just talk about it. We remember the shofar, but we don't actively blow it. In accordance with that view, that it's biblical that Zichron Truah is on Rosh Hashanah and Shabbat, and Yom Truah is Rosh Hashanah in a weekday. As a deraita, biblical, our tefillah acknowledges this. Because in our machzer, this coming Friday night, it's going to say, En kiddush in davening, vatitin lano Hashem lakenu bi'ava, et yom ha-zikaron, yom ha-shabbat hazeh, vet yom ha-zikaron hazeh, yom zichron truah mikra kodesh. That's what we're going to say. In parentheses, it's going to say, on Shabbat, you include the word zichron. That's in accordance with the Yerushalmi. The Bavli, while mentioning this particular drasha, opts for something else and says, that actually, from a biblical point of view, we're all supposed to blow the shofar on Shabbat. But there was an issue of Chilul Shabbat. Somebody in an area where there's no Erev might have forgotten to bring the shofar to shul. The Gemara talks about that you might have to take the shofar to some expert to teach you, to guide you. The bottom line is, you're going to put the shofar in your lapel inside pocket of your jacket and carry it. And one Jew is going to be Mechalel Shabbat, it's not worth it. So let's dispense with everybody blowing shofar. I mean, that's like really startling. It tells you something about Chilul Shabbat against the mitzvah, the positive mitzvah, the central mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, of blowing shofar. We'd rather not have one person be Mechalel Shabbat. Now, this is used two other occasions. On another mitzvah d'oraita, sukkah, lulav. Now sukkah, we sit in the sukkah on Shabbat. But arba minim, this year, if Rosh Hashanah is on Shabbat, so the 15th of Tishrei is also on Shabbat, and this 15th of Tishrei is the only day that the mitzvah of arba minim is midoraita. We have this right on the source page in Mishnah Gimel. Barishona haya lulav nital b'mikdash shiv'ah. In the Beit HaMikdash, they took the lulav 7 days. Ubamdina, outside the Beit HaMikdash, yom echad. Mishacharav Beit HaMikdash, after the destruction, itkin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, she'a lulav nital bamdina shiv'a, zecha l'mikdash. So we do that. We take the lulav 7 days. But day one, it's biblical, d'oraita, and 6 days, it's rabbinic, just as a zecha l'mikdash. This year, we are not going to be fulfilling the mitzvah of lulav, midoraita. Why? For the same reason. Shema Yavirenu Dal Ramot. Somebody might carry it in a place that there's no Erev. It's just not worth it. And the third halacha is Megillah, and that can only be in a place where there was a Megillah reading on the 15th, like here in Yerushalayim. So we don't read the Megillah on Yerushalayim. Of course, today we have an Erev, but once upon a time they didn't. Shema Yavirenu Dal Ramot Birshut HaRabim. So you have these three halachot. And indeed, the Rambam is going to tell us, and let's look at this middle section of Pirush HaMishnah, where it says, Aleph, Kvar Biyarni Lecha Kama Pamim, Ki Mikdash Nikreit Yerushalayim Kula. I'm going to get back to this. Umandina means the rest of Eretz Yisrael. Shar Eretz Yisrael is called Medina, which means the Rambam believes that in all of Yerushalayim, there is shofar blowing on Shabbat, and in a moment we're going to try to understand why, and according to the Yerushalmi, it's Doraita, that there's no shofar blowing on Shabbat. Zichron Truah says that when Rosh Hashanah comes out on Shabbat, there's no shofar blowing. But there's one exception. And that is, where is the mitzvah given of shofar? So if you ask the question, which parsha teaches us about Arba Minim, Lulav and Esrog? Which parsha teaches about Sukkah? It's Emor. That's the parsha of Chagim. Eile Moadei Hashem Mikra'i Kodesh. But it's interesting that in Emor, it should have said, Yom Truah Yelachem. This is the day that you should be hearing the shofar. What does it say there? There it says, Zichron Truah Mikra'i Kodesh. Where does it say Yom Truah? In Parshat Pinchas. Very odd. In the Korbanot. In the section of the Korban Musaf of the Yom Tov. And the Yerushalmi understands that even though there's no mitzvah of shofar blowing on Shabbat anywhere from a biblical point of view, but in the place that the korbanot are offered, there is shofar blowing. Yom Truah Yiyeh Lachem. Okay, so now we understand that it's in the place that the korbanot. But the Rambam comes along and expands this and says, you know what the place where the korbanot are offered? It's not just the confines of Machane Shechina or Harabayit Machane Leviyah, but it's Machane Yisrael. It's all of Yerushalayim that's sanctified with the Kedusha. Now, there are many of the Rishonim that didn't buy into this. They said Migdash is Migdash. And with the Sanhedrin sat, they sat on Harabayit. But in places called Yerushalayim, no. No shofar blowing. But the Rambam descent argues and says, no, Yerushalayim is an integral part of Migdash. And that's why all of Yerushalayim would have shofar blowing on Shabbat. This is what led people like Rav Ariel today's day and other great Rabbanim in the 19th and early 20th century in the Old City to blow shofar on Shabbat in line with the Rambam's point of view. Now, not everybody agrees with it, but it's a shita, it's a view. You can't argue with it, no doubt. I recently came across some of the Rav's writings on Tisha B'Av when Rabbi J.J. Schechter, those of you who know him, he put out a very, very important volume of the Rav on Keynote, essays about the Rav on his Tisha B'Av talks. And in one of them, the Rav is reflecting upon post-Six-Day War and what's happening today in Yerushalayim. And he actually marvels at Yerushalayim being rebuilt. And he says, it's not a quote, but it's a paraphrase. He says, and you know what means Yerushalayim being built? It means the Migdash is being built. Wow. You know, I thought this might come from somebody like Rav Yisrael Ariel. And this is the Rav, who said that what it means that Yerushalayim is being built up today, that means that the Migdash is being built. That's what it means, because the Rav is impacted by the Rambam's point of view. No question about it. Because Migdash, Yerushalayim, is part and parcel of the Migdash complex. I think that's a great word. The Migdash complex. And that's how he sees it here. But let's take a next line. V'ta'am, what's the reason? Shebiglala ne'esrat tkiat shofar b'shabbat. So what's the reason? So number one, he says, what we said before, this is a restriction, a rabbinic restriction, because somebody might, God forbid, be mechalel Shabbat. I explained this already in Masechet Sukkah with regard to not taking the lulav on Shabbat. It's not a malacha to play a musical instrument at all. It's a talent. It's called chokhmah ve'ena malacha. It's a talent. It's not a malacha. It doesn't fall into any of the 39 categories of malacha. So why did Chazal prohibit playing musical instruments on Shabbat? Because you might repair it. You might tune the guitar. That's the biblical violation. But to strum and play it? So it's not a malacha. Why can't? And it's a wind instrument. And you know, wind instruments, you don't have to tune. So why can't we blow it on Shabbat? So therefore, the issue was carrying in Rishut HaRabim. And then the Rambam says, Ve'amru, and the Mishnah says, Echad Yavna ve'echad kol makom sheyesh beitin. Not just the city of Yavna, but also any other city that had a recognized Beit Din HaGadol. So I mentioned it made 10 stations until they got to Tveria. Ritzono Lomar, that is to say, Afilu Aya Beit Din B'Masa, even if Beit Din was in transit. So this is the Beit Din HaGadol, the in-transit, the Holchei Usha, as I quoted from Baba Batra. V'chanu Be'ezem Akom, and they stayed, they parked, as if to say, in a particular location, whether it's Shvaram, whether it's Usha, whether it's Tveria, wherever it might be. Look at Lityashev Sham, they're not going to stay there, but it's in transit. Rishaim Litko Hasham, they're allowed to blow in such a place on Shabbat. But Rambam says, Eina Halacha. The Rambam believes that basically it was just Yavna had a special license to blow on Shabbat. Why could you blow on Shabbat in a place that there was a authorized Beit Din HaGadol? Because in such a location, they would be very careful that there wouldn't be Chilul Shabbat. That's how the Rambam understands it. That if the whole issue was this rabbinic restriction because of somebody might violate the Shabbat, so if there's a mashgiach, if you may, like Beit Din HaGadol, there's a principle that in the Beit HaMikdash confines, there were no rabbinic restrictions. Why? The Sanhedrin's sitting there. So the rabbinic restrictions are because you live out in the boondocks, so you might slip. And therefore, let's move the line, the boundary of prohibition, so you don't trespass the biblical violation. You know, if you trespass the rabbinic, all right, it's not good, but it's not the end of the world. But in Beit HaMikdash, there's no problem. There's no danger of trespassing because they're sitting there and watching. So that's why you'd be able to blow shofar. But according to the Yerushalmi opinion, that it has to do with place of korban, it's interesting the Rambam doesn't pick up on this at all. So there's some justification for tkiat shofar today as well. And you may ask, well, if there's an Erev, what's the big deal? And here in Eretz Yisrael, we have an Erev around every major city, not an even minor city, and every yeshuv, and every kibbutz, and every moshav. Basically, there's Erev in all over the place. You can still have a place without an Erev. You know, it can happen. It can happen. You know, when we start educating our yeshiva high school kids that there's a thing called not a prohibition of carrying on Shabbat before they go to Poland. It's the first time in their lives that they're going to experience Shabbat without an Erev. Now, sometimes they go to Chutz Laretz with their families and they have to be told that not every city in the world has an Erev. As a matter of fact, most cities don't have. But of course, if it's a Jewish community, maybe it does have an Erev. But many of us know that places like New York City, for many, many years, did not have an Erev. I mean, when they put up the Erev in Flatbush neighborhood of Brooklyn, they were, you know, not everybody went for it, and it was a big machloket, and so on. But many of the new neighborhoods with young couples today, you know, the first thing they do is they make an Erev, because if you don't do that, you're not going to attract young people to come in. Young women with their babies, the carriages, don't want to be cooped up at home like my mother was for so many years in Washington Heights. And the only time she went out was Yom Tov, where you're allowed to do it, because you're allowed to carry on Yom Tov and so on. But on Shabbat, you know, you were confined to the house. It was not easy. If you were a shul goer and so on. That's why the women in shul were either high school kids or grandmothers. Most other women wouldn't go to shul. Forget about Friday night. Whoever went to shul Friday night in America? Nobody went to shul Friday night. Now it's more common, by the way. And you're right. In your day, my day, right. In the ancient time, you say in Yiddish, Amolik Zeiten, the days of Amolik, right? Amolik Zeiten. That was a phrase, you know, Amolik Zeiten, right? So you have this idea with regard to the Shofar and Shabbat. In the yeshiva in Otniel, it's a wonderful yeshiva, very highly charged spiritual yeshiva. So on this coming Shabbat, they're going to get to the point in the Machzor where if it would be a weekday and there be shofar blowing, they stop and they close their eyes and they stand and they meditate for 15 minutes as if the shofar is being blown. Now, on this coming Shabbat, on Shabbat Rosh Hashanah, you have to be on their mindset to begin to grasp what they're trying to do. That there is a sound of a shofar that's not being blown. You got to be a spiritual person to pick up on this one. I will be the first to admit I'm not there. I'm admitting I'm not there. But I'm a little bit jealous of those who think they are there, that they have this ability to pick up the sound of the shofar on Shabbat. It's just an amazing thing. Yeah, okay, I pick up sounds, but I can imagine the sound of a shofar. I don't know. They do it at the beginning. Maybe they do it after Malchiyot Zechronot Shofarot also. This I don't know. But I do know, I mean, my daughter lived there for a while, and my son-in-law went to the yeshiva there. So what I'm telling you is fact, not fiction. I mean, I talk fiction all the time. You know that. But this b'mikre is fact. You know, but it's an unbelievable thing that there is such a concept of shofar without a shofar. Shofar without a shofar. It's maybe it relates to something that I once heard Rav Lichtenstein, Zecharon Levracha, quote the Rav's younger brother, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zecharon Levracha, who quoted the Bala Tanya, the author of Tanya, the founder of Chabad. And he said there are three levels of song. First level is a song with words. Okay? Song with words. We understand that. Many of us have lyrics that go with the melody. Higher level is a melody, a nigun without words. I get that also. It's a very, very spiritual type of thing. But the Bala Tanya said that there's a higher level. He called it a nigun without a nigun, a melody without a melody. And I don't exactly know what he's talking about. But I went over to Rav Lichtenstein after the shiur and I said, you know what, I'm going to take a shot at it. What a nigun without a nigun is. She said, what? I said, it's a Litvish nigun. If you're a Litvak, I have never heard a good Bal Tfila who was a Litvak. All the Bal Tfila are Hasidish, Polish, Hungarian, but not from Lita. They weren't into melody. And the truth is, the Rav himself, who was a Levi, said openly that in the third Beit HaMikdash, he wouldn't be part of the choir. He said that because he wasn't that talented musically. Right. So the Levi also was on guard duty. You know what the Rav said? This was absolutely startling. He said it was lo lefichvo zaken velo lefichvo do. He didn't think it would be appropriate for him to be a doorman with the stature of a person that he was. So he actually figured out what he was going to do in the third Beit HaMikdash. He was going to be the tutor of the Kohen Gadol for the Avoda. Private tutor. And teach him what to do. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yefemot. In the Netana Tokef, you have the concept of a kol d'mama daka. It's there. So the question is, does that mean silent? Or a whisper? You know, even though it's a shofar gadol, but maybe what comes out is nothing more than a whisper. Or no sound at all. Kol d'mama. You know, mikol melamdai hiskalti. I learned from everybody. Simon and Garfunkel's best song was The Sound of Silence. Is their best song, The Sound of Silence. And sometimes the silence is deafening. It's deafening. There is a sound to silence. There is a sound. And it can take us in different directions, for sure. So here we have experiencing Rosh Hashanah on Shabbat. Okay. I remember when Tisha B'Av came out on Shabbat, so we fast on Sunday. So the whole machloket, there's a dispute whether, what does that mean, that Tisha B'Av and Shabbat, you move to a Sunday? Does it mean that Tisha B'Av as a generic idea uplifts itself, uproots itself from Shabbat and is transplanted on Sunday? So even though the calendar date is the 10th of Av, it's Tisha B'Av from a halachic point of view. Or no, Tisha B'Av is Shabbat. Just you can't fast on Shabbat and you can't mourn on Shabbat, so we make it up tomorrow on the 10th. But Tisha B'Av is Shabbat. And there are many, many ramifications to this dispute. But remember, the Lubavitch Rebbe once said in a sicha, he said, Tisha B'Av on Shabbat? You know, Chazal, the Navi, the Zechariah was asked the question, now that Beit HaMikdash is standing, should we observe Tisha B'Av with the Beit HaMikdash. And this great answer of Tzomer Aviv, Tzomer Chamishi, Tzomer Shvi, Tzomer Asiri, Yeh LeBeit Yehuda LeSoson LeSimcha, that these fast days are going to become Yamim Tovim. So Lubavitcher said that when Shavuos B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av come out on Shabbat, we're tasting the Tisha B'Av of Acharit HaYamim. Because the halacha says, not only allowed to have meat and wine, but even Sudah Shlishit, where usually you get away with a piece of herring and a little bilka. Right, Kisudat Shlomo, correct. Kisudat Shlomo, it says you can have a banquet. You can have a banquet right before Tisha B'Av because it's Shabbos. And the Lubavitcher said, from here you see that sometimes you can take the day, and I'm using Tisha B'Av as an example, on Shabbat and twist it around. Somehow, something about Rosh Hashanah on Shabbat, it makes it somewhat special. And it's a type of Yom HaDin that maybe it's Yom HaDin with Yom Menucha together, whatever that means, and forge together a special experience of Kedushat HaYom that Shabbat doesn't need tefillin, so Shabbat doesn't need shofar. However you're going to understand that. That the closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be achieved without going through the shofar itself. So that's a line of thinking that deserves, you know, some attention as well. Okay, let me just say a few words about, before wrapping up, the Mishnah Hay. The Mishnah Hay on the top part, or the Mishnayah part, so it tells us about the order of the brachot. So the order of the brachot of Shmon Esrei on Tfilat Musaf. But it's interesting, the Mishnah doesn't say Tfilat Musaf. We know that on Rosh Hashanah and Musaf, we have an expanded davening, where normally on Shabbat and Yom Tov, the Shmon Esrei, again, that's a generic term, because there are no 18 brachot, there's 7 brachot on Shabbat and Yom Tov. The first 3, the last 3, and the middle bracha of Mekadesh HaShabbat, or Mekadesh Yisrael V'Rosh HaChodeshim, or Mekadesh Yisrael V'Azmanim on Yom Tov, or Mekadesh Yisrael V'Yom HaKippurim on Yom Kippur. So we have Mekadesh Yisrael V'Yom HaZikaron on Rosh Hashanah, except that we have added brachot, Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofarot. We have sections of speaking about crowning God as king of the universe, not just Am Yisrael doing it, but we're hopeful that the world at large acknowledges the Malchut Shemayim, Meloch al kol ha'olam kulo b'chvodecha. And the idea of V'haya Hashem le'melech al kol ha'aretz, that's what Malchut. And the Chazal say, you do it by citing 3 psukim of Torah, 3 psukim from Ketuvim, which is Tehillim, 3 psukim from Nevi'im, and wrapping it up with 1 more pasuk from the Torah, grand total 10. So you have 10 psukim for Malchiot, and then there's the Zichronot. We don't have to remind the Kadosh Baruch Hu anything. We bring to our attention creation of the world, Noach, and up to Avram Avinu, the Akedah, and it's a whole shir in itself. And you do the same thing. 3 psukim from Torah, 3 from the Tehillim, 3 from Nevi'im, 1 pasuk from the Torah, and then Shofarot, all different psukim in the Tanakh from Shofar. Fine. So you have 3 added brachot. Now, if we wouldn't have those 3 added brachot, how many brachot would the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah have? 7. Like Pesach and Shavuot and Sukkot. 7. 3, 1, and 3. Okay, so now we have 3, 1, and 3, and 3 additional. If I remember correctly from second grade arithmetic, that adds up to 10. Did I get that one right? Did I get the math right? 3 plus 7 plus 3? Except that there's a tradition that there are only 9 brachot. And I didn't make that up. Ezra HaSofer brings us the tradition from the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah, 9 brachot. So if there are 9 brachot, but there are 10 items on the agenda, so what do? It's called Shitat HaKvetch. You have to kvetch 2 things into 1. Do you remember there was I remember the commercial very vividly, in the late 50s and 60s, there was a mint candy called Certs. And it had 2 different properties. And in the commercial, they had the certs, 2 mints in 1. That became the commercial. It was very powerful. I remember it 60 years later, you know. So basically, what we're going to do is take 2 of the items of the agenda and forge it into 1 bracha. So how do we do it? We take Malchiot and graft it on the Kedushat HaYom. Like after Ata b'chatanu mikol amim, mibnecha ta'enu galinu me'arzenu, this is standard Musaf language, and we bring the korban from Parshat Pinchas. Then we have aleinu l'shabeach, and Hashem v'alkein nekaveh, Hashem yimloch l'olam va'ed, v'ne'emar, 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 all the psukim, and the bracha comes with a double ending, Baruch Atah Hashem, melech al kol ha'aretz, mikadesh Yisrael v'yom ha'zikaron. So melech al kol ha'aretz is the chatima, the ending of Malchiot, and mikadesh Yisrael v'yom ha'zikaron is kedushat hayom, the sanctity of the day. That's what we do. What do you mean that's what we do? We do like Rabbi Akiva says in the Mishnah. But there were two other opinions of how to slice the pie. And that's of great interest. So one of them, mentioned in the Mishnah itself, is, one second, there is already a bracha of Malchiot. Baruch Atah Hashem, HaMelech HaKadosh. The third bracha of every day Shmoneh Esrei that ends with HaKel HaKadosh is expanded in the Yomim Noraim with Uvechein Tein Pachtecha Hashem Elokeinu Veimatcha Al Kol Ma'adukha Veyuach Al Kol HaMasim Uvechein Tein Kavod Uvechein Tzadikim, and so on. And it ends with Baruch Atah Hashem, HaMelech HaKadosh. Can you get a better address to put the psukim of Malchiot? You're already saying Malchiot. You're saying Melech. Why don't we do it over there? It seems very logical. And that was the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. It's an opinion. And Rabbi Akiva argues, and no. So the question is, why not? So the Rav gave a very interesting understanding and was probably relevant to the contemporary situation of trying to understand what government is all about. Is Melech in halachic terminology, is it a theocracy? Theocracy means ruling by God. Does a Kadosh Baruch Hu appoint the king of Am Yisrael? Well, seemingly yes. Rambam says you have to have a Navi. Shmuel HaNavi says that Shaul's going to be the Melech. David's going to be the Melech. Seems to be a theocracy. No. The Rambam tells us you need a Melech, but you also need Shivim Zkenim. The 70s, the Sanhedrin. So both the Rav and Rav Kook independently asked the identical question, and they both gave the same answers. Interesting. They said, the purpose of the Sanhedrin, why, a Kadosh Baruch Hu needs a Heksha? We need 70 hands to go up, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu says that Shaul's going to be Melech. So 70 Zkenim are going to say, yeah, good idea. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need a Heksha. So why is it done? Because a Kadosh Baruch Hu does not appoint a king. Am Yisrael appoints the king. Kadosh Baruch Hu recommends a candidate. That's all. And the 70 Zkenim, as the electoral college, has to ratify that nomination. And if those 70 do not ratify the nomination, then a Kadosh Baruch Hu has to go back to the drawing boards and come up with a different name. That's the way it works. So Rav Kook went further. That's how the Rav understood it. That's how Rav Kook understood it. That it's actually an appointment by Am Yisrael, and the Sanhedrin acts as a representative body of Klal Yisrael. That's why I called it a electoral college. Rav Kook went a step further and said, in the absence of a Sanhedrin and a Beit Navi, a prophet, this authority reverts back to Klal Yisrael. And therefore, by going to the poll booth and voting for a government, you're in partial fulfillment of Tzom Tassim Alech HaMelech, appointing a king in Eretz Yisrael. It's a phenomenal thing. That's a phenomenal idea. So there were plenty of Malachim in Am Yisrael who didn't fit either. Plenty, both in Bayit Rishon and certainly in Bayit Sheni. There were plenty who didn't fit. They were not really bringing Nachat to David HaMelech, putting it mildly. But nevertheless, they had a loch of a king. I mean, Eliyahu Navi has Derech Eretz for Achav, who brought Avodah Zarah into the country. But he was a king, so you have to have Derech Eretz for him. So this is an important statement. And that's why I mentioned today on my father's yard site, that when he voted for the first time in 96, here after we began Olah Chadash, he made a Shecheyanu. So I said, where does it say in Shulchan Aruch, Hayotzei me'akalpi b'pam erushana mevorchin Shecheyanu? So he said, I was 12 years old in Kristallnacht in Berlin, and now I'm here counting my great-grandchildren, 50 great-grandchildren in Yerushalayim, you don't think I should make a Shecheyanu? Okay, beseda, I had no words. But it's interesting that I remember in one of the elections in 1988, it became a big thing that it's a mitzvah to vote. So, you know, in the religious Zionist camp, this was the mitzvah, you know, lauding Rav Kook's idea, it's a mitzvah. Rav Avad Yosef got on the air in his campaigns, and he said, it's a mitzvah l'shmo al edivrei chachamim, and I'm telling you to vote Shas. So that was the mitzvah. Okay. But what the funniest was, absolute funniest, was the vision of Tzareb in Bnei Brak. That year in 88, the Haredi world was split between Aguda and Yahdut HaTorah. Today, they're one party called Yahdut. It was Aguda and Degel HaTorah. Degel HaTorah. I don't even remember which side the vision of Rebbe was at, but on a Sudash Lishit, for most people, it would have been Malava Malka. He said, it's a mitzvah to go to vote. So a chassid said, a mitzvah? A mitzvah like eating matzah? She said, no. It's a mitzvah like eating moror. So everybody had their mitzvahs, but I felt more in line with the Rav Kook's understanding that it's a mitzvah of tosom tasim alecha melech. So the Rav said, what is this business of Malchiot on Rosh Hashanah? So if you go to Chabad this coming Friday night, they have a ceremony called Leil Hachtara, in Yiddish, Koronatzia Nacht, crowning the king. They're going to put a crown on a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need a crown. What are they doing? They're actually going through the motions of voting for a Kadosh Baruch Hu and deciding, yes, we want a Kadosh Baruch Hu to be our king. And the Rav said there are two ways that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is king. He prefers democratically. Democrat means the Shilton of the Am, that people vote him in. That's what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. Vayashem lemelech hakol haaretz, that the world at large should acknowledge him. It started with Avram Avinu, and we're continuing. Vayikra b'shem Hashem el olam, spread the word. But what if the people, or even Am Yisrael, are not there yet? They're not accepting a Kadosh Baruch Hu out of their free choice. Then a Kadosh Baruch Hu has ways. He has ways to force you to accept him. You know, there's a phrase, there's no atheist in a foxhole. It came from a chaplain in British Army over 150 years ago. There's no atheist in a foxhole. When the shells are falling, everybody believes in God. Nobody's an atheist. Uvachein tein pachtecha Hashem Elokeinu. An earthquake in Morocco, Nebuch, over 2,000 people killed in a split second. And most probably that number is going to rise, unfortunately. Kadosh Baruch Hu can use what they call on CNN extreme weather conditions, tornadoes, hurricanes, an earthquake, a magefa, all kinds of things that can be used to force us to turn to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the Malchiyot of HaMelech HaKadosh. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva said, let's not mix Malchiyot and Malchiyot. HaMelech HaKadosh is the lower level of accepting God, because out of pachad, out of fear, like Yonah figured it out on the high sea in a storm, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us sometimes messages. You know, a person, you know, he doesn't need a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but all of a sudden, a person gets sick, and then you do need a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu prefers the type of Malchiyot that's by choice. And that's Melocha Kol Olam Kulo B'Chvodecha. And that's the Malchiyot that we strive for. Yiratzon, that this coming Rosh Hashanah, Ba'alenu Tova, we should all be on the Madrega of Melocha Kol Olam. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu should be with us, the Melecha Kol Aretz, Mekadesh Yisrael, Mekadesh HaShabbat v'Yisrael v'Yom HaZikaron. Our next shiur will be a Ketivat Tematava for all of us. Mirz Hashem. Our next year is going to be in a month. If you look at the calendar, next year is going to be in a month on Isru Chag of Chag HaSukkot, on Sunday, the day of after Shmini Atzeret Simchat Torah. Okay, be well.